bonnevilleinternational.com.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning. Welcome to For Your Benefit. My name is Tammy Flanagan, and I'm sitting in the host chair today for Bob Lyons, who has not a fun day off, I don't think, because it is tax season, even though a lot of us think tax season is in April. I guess if you're a CPA, you have a second tax season when all those people who postpone their taxes start to come around and want you to help them out. So we're going to give him the day off today. And I have a little bone to pick with Bob, because normally his job is to talk about the life after retirement and planning for a successful retirement and, you know, just the wonderful things that we get ready for and we think positively about retirement. And when I heard about the topic I was going to be covering today, I got a little bit concerned because the topic today is hospice. And I always think of hospice as usually the last days or the last weeks, perhaps, of life. And I'm thinking, boy, that sounds a little depressing. And then I also thought, how am I going to tie that in with federal benefits and the federal employee? So I gave it some thought. And at first I thought, okay, well, we can tie it in with insurance, which is true, because we are only about 3 months away from the next health benefits open season. So it is something that you want to add to your thoughts when you're choosing a health plan, if it is an issue for you, if you're just concerned about it. And I also thought, well, it's not that depressing, because it's a way that we can manage pain and we can take care of those of our family members who might be in a position where they need that kind of help. And it's something we don't like to think about. But maybe it's something we should give it some thought and spend the next hour talking about it. So to help us with that, we have a specialist, someone who I think is very well qualified to help answer our questions. Her name is Amy Tucci, and she is the president and CEO of the Hospice Foundation of America, which does a lot of education and a lot of help with the hospice area of what we're going to be talking about. So welcome, welcome, Amy. I was going to call you Susan Tucci because I know a Susan Tucci, by the way.
Thank you, Tammy. Thanks for having me today.
You're welcome. Thanks for being here. And we also have Ann Vincent with us today. And Ann is here from NITP, as I am. Ann doesn't do the presenting, but she works behind the scenes and does a lot of our marketing. So welcome, Ann.
Thank you, Tammy. It's always good to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. Glad that you're here with us. And my background is in benefits, as a lot of our regular listeners know. So if you do have any questions for us today, either on the area of benefits or retirement seminars or our main topic of conversation, which is going to be the subject of hospice, please call us. This is Monday, August 23rd, and we will be live on the air until 10:58 this morning. So if you're listening live, you can give us a call at 202-465-3080. It's 202-465-3080, and we certainly welcome you to call in and ask us any questions that might be on your mind. Or if it's after the show and you want to still ask a question, you can do that by emailing us at foryourbenefit@nitpink.com. That's NITPINC.com. foryourbenefit@nitpink.com. And we'll be happy to get back to you and answer any questions that you might have. So to start us off this morning, I guess to begin with, let's talk a little bit about where you work, Amy, and what is the Hospice Foundation of America?
We're a national nonprofit that has really two missions. One is to educate the public about hospice and end-of-life care, and the second mission is to educate professionals. And by doing that, we elevate the quality of hospice care provided to people around the country. And about 1.4 million people will die this year in hospice care, which is about a little bit more than a third of all deaths in the United States.
Wow. We usually associate hospice with cancer. Is that typically the patient is going to be a diagnosis of cancer, or could it be other things as well?
About 40% of people who receive hospice care are cancer, have a cancer diagnosis, but there are a number of other diseases that are and conditions that are treated and cared for under hospice care. Some of those are Alzheimer's and dementia, Lou Gehrig's disease, renal failure, a number, debility unspecified, which sometimes just means that somebody's
failing
because they're getting very old.
Mm-hmm. And the term hospice, because I know we were talking before we went on the air about two different terms that I think not everybody I don't even understand for sure, but there's the palliative care,
right.
Which I can't even say, let alone know what it is, and also hospice care. So is there a difference between those two types of care that you might receive?
There is a difference and a similarity. Palliative care is care that's meant to relieve pain, and can be, palliative care is always part of hospice care. Hospice care is not part of palliative care. That's the way I like to think of it. So, right. So, palliative care can be extremely helpful to people who are receiving, chemotherapy, radiation, or some of the more difficult, treatments that are meant to cure a disease. Palliative care can be used in tandem with treatment. And hospice care is really meant for the last 6 months of somebody's life. Sometimes it's shorter than that, sometimes it's longer than that. But palliative care is incorporated as part of hospice care, and really all hospice clinicians and people who work in the field of hospice care are expert palliative care providers. That's what hospice people do best, is control pain and symptoms.
Okay. Let's go back, because I want to talk a little bit more about your organization as far as what is it that they do and how do they accomplish their mission?
Right. Well, we've been around since about 1990 in Washington, D.C. We were established in 1982 and sort of took on a national scope in the early 90s. And what we do is we answer questions. People call us, people email us. We're really a clearinghouse for people who need information. So that's how we serve the public. For instance, you can email us by going to our website, or you can, our website is, thank you, www.hospicefoundation, that's all one word, .org. And we respond to your questions within 24 hours of getting that question. You can call us. The number is 1-800-854-3402. And you can also visit our website and get a whole wealth of information about not only hospice, but caregiving and
even dealing with grief. I saw there was
grief,
a lot of information.
A lot of information about grief, because that's very important. It's a very important part of what hospice does, is help people manage their grief, both the person that's being cared for and also the family or friends after a death.
Yeah, you're not a lobbying association, but you are an association that does receive some funding, and you provide help for organizations and groups and educational endeavors with that funding, which comes, I guess, through volunteer donations and also maybe through the government organizations that deal with this type of thing. And you were saying there was an interesting thing you did with children.
Right.
Yeah, with some of the donated funds that you received.
We run our organization both by donations and by sales. We sell a lot of products to professionals, but we also rely a great deal on donations. We're part of the Combined Federal Campaign, which has always supported us very generously. And we have found that we can not only run the organization with those donations that are so important, but we can also help fund other programs that are really worthy. For example, we are funding children's grief programs around the country right now. This is our second year of doing that, and what we do is we ask for applications from those programs, and they go through a very stringent review process, and we pick out programs from people who groups that are really doing fantastic things with kids who have suffered a loss. So
That's a wonderful thing to do, because I think children, sometimes we think that they don't suffer grief because they are children and they kind of resilient to things and they don't really have the effect of it. But I'll bet that they really do.
Oh, they do.
A lot of it is kept inside.
Kept inside, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are, and there are some wonderful, wonderful camps and programs for children out there. We're very fortunate to be able to help fund those.
Are there links on your website to how to find out more about those programs?
There are. We have write-ups of the programs we've funded last year as well as the ones that we're funding this year. Please visit our website to check those out.
And I guess they're throughout the country as well?
They are. They're very geographically diverse. We also try to fund programs that really reach out to diverse audiences. So maybe a kid who's primary language might be Spanish, but they're not getting that help because they can't attend a regular, a grief program that might exist already. We're going for some of those very unusual programs.
Mm-hmm. I was looking through our federal health benefit brochures because when I teach a seminar on retirement planning, we talk about insurance and continuation of insurance and qualifying for Medicare and buying long-term care insurance, and all of that's kind of interrelated, and I think all of it touches on someone who might need hospice care. So as an example, let me read a couple of – I pulled three different health plans just out of the blue just to kind of see how they cover hospice care. So the big granddaddy health plan, which is Blue Cross Blue Shield, I pulled out their brochure. And it describes that hospice care is an integrated set of services and supplies designed to provide palliative and supportive care to members with a projected life expectancy of 6 months or less, which is pretty much the same definition as Amy just gave us a couple minutes ago. And so I wanted to see, well, what does Blue Cross cover? And it will cover the pre-approval and the planning for hospice care. And it also covers the hospice care itself, where the participant in Blue Cross doesn't have to pay nothing other than a copayment of $200 if it's a preferred provider, or $350 if it's a member provider, or a co-insurance amount if it's non-member. So just like most insurance companies, it has that preferred provider option, which I think the doctors would make sure they found you a preferred facility. The only thing Blue Cross doesn't cover would be homemaker services and home hospice care that's provided and billed other than by the approved hospice agency. So I guess if you just wanted to hire your sister to come in and provide care,
they wouldn't
cover that, but they would cover it from the providing agency that's supporting that. So it sounds like through your federal health plan, at least through Blue Cross, they cover it very well. And I also checked out one of the HMOs, because a lot of our federal employees have coverage through Aetna, and they have coverage through Kaiser and MDIPA. So I pulled out Kaiser just to see what they cover. And it's the same thing. They cover everything. However, the difference with an HMO, you have to use their participating approved facility. So if you're in Kaiser, you have to use a Kaiser approved hospice facility that's approved by the team of doctors that are providing your care. So it looks as though our federal health plans do a pretty good job of covering hospice care. But I know that Medicare also provides coverage. And a lot of people, when they buy long-term care insurance, they're also thinking they're buying it to cover the need for hospice. So could you explain a little bit about maybe the difference between getting benefits through your health plan if you're under 65, or how does that change once you're over 65? And I know you had mentioned before about the percentage of people who receive this care oftentimes are over age 65 and they have Medicare benefits, and then add to that maybe where long-term care insurance might also help.
Right. Tammy, about 84% of those who received hospice care last year were Medicare recipients. However, it's really important, I think, to, when you're considering a health plan, check out the hospice benefit and see what's there. You want a benefit that's comprehensive, and like some of these policies that you mentioned, really does provide everything that you would need. Now, long-term care insurance does not cover hospice care, and that's something that listeners should really be aware of. But what long-term care insurance can possibly do for you is, if you're residing in a long-term care facility, it will cover that room and board that the hospice benefit will not cover.
Right.
So if you're, let's say you're a Medicare recipient and you're 75 years old and you're in a long-term care facility, if you have long-term care insurance, it will help offset any cost that would be
over and above what Medicare
right.
covers,
exactly.
which is not much when it comes to the room and board fees for
right.
that type of long-term care
yeah,
facility.
Yeah, some of the long-term care facilities can be very expensive, but that is defined as your private residence,
mm-hmm.
so or your residence, I should say. So if your hospice care covers everything except for that room and board.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are types of hospice care that actually include the room and board. Or, for instance, if somebody cannot be, somebody needs their pain or symptoms managed, oftentimes a hospice will provide a short-term inpatient facility to bring the person in, get that pain managed, and then the patient can go home
mm-hmm.
and be with their family again. And the same would hold true. There are also residential hospice facilities where the Medicare benefit would cover the care there, but there could be an additional cost for
the room and board
right.
basics. Expenses.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So that's good. So we do know then that our health plans will cover hospice care. I know with the federal plans, many of them will set a limit. For instance, GEHA, Government Employees Hospital Association, will pay $4,000 for care on an outpatient basis. And for room and board care inpatient, they'll pay $250 a day up to a maximum of $5,000. So I guess if it went on beyond that, you would pay the additional expenses out of pocket, which that, again, would be where it's nice if you have long-term care insurance, because that can pick up where your insurance coverage would have left off.
Right.
So I think they do go hand in hand.
Yeah, I mean, I could see somebody who's young and healthy maybe picking an insurance policy, a plan that wasn't as comprehensive when it came to hospice care. But I think as we all get older, we realize that we're all vulnerable to these things that we never thought were going to happen to us.
Right.
Right. So the more comprehensive a plan, the better off you are.
Right. Yeah, I think mm-hmm. we can all relate to that, where we know either family members or family members of friends who have dealt with the hospice situation. Ann and I both in the last year have had personal experiences with family members who have received care in hospice, with Anne, with her father,
mm-hmm.
and your
yes.
mother as well. Did she also?
No, she did not.
She didn't go into
no.
hospice, but her father recently passed away and had some time in hospice. And my cousin had pancreatic and lung cancer, and he suffered with that from August until he passed away in January. But he didn't receive the hospice care till about the last week of his life. And of the whole time he suffered with that illness, that was the only time his family said that he really felt comfortable and pain-free, and he was able to talk to them and really have some nice quality moments before he finally passed away.
It's really a shame. That is what we hear probably more than anything else at the Hospice Foundation of America. We hear, I wish we had known about hospice sooner, because oftentimes the referral to hospice is not made in a timely manner. Sometimes it's the physician, the treating physician, for example, maybe the oncologist, who just doesn't feel comfortable making that referral or having the conversation with a patient. Sometimes it's the patient that wants to, or the family that's encouraging the patient to really use every sort of treatment there is until there is none. You know,
right.
until everything
keep that
is exhausted.
Hope that they're going to recover,
right.
I
but,
guess. It's
you
hard
know,
to admit.
It's interesting. There have been a couple of studies that have come out really recently that have shown that, for example, in 2007, there was a study, I believe it's out of Duke University, saying that hospice patients, actually, if you looked at the lifespan of hospice patients and you looked at the lifespan of people who were receiving aggressive treatment at the and the very, you know, end of life, the hospice patients lived longer, and they had a much better quality of life. Another study just came out last week And it was about palliative care. Palliative care, of course, to just remind people, palliative care is part of hospice care, and it can be a separate sort of treatment. Oftentimes it's used as a bridge to hospice. But anyway, this study showed that lung cancer patients who were receiving palliative care live longer than lung cancer patients that were receiving aggressive treatment alone. Mm-hmm. So if you looked at, and some of those patients, those palliative care patients who were lung cancer patients, discontinued or did not receive as much chemotherapy as their counterparts that were in the other part of the study. So, I think, you know, relieving pain is so important to quality of life. And if you're in terrible pain, you're not, you have a bigger chance of not being able to eat, being depressed, having increased anxiety.
Have those nice moments with your family.
And you can't enjoy that, the family time that you might. You certainly can if you're pain-free.
You remember Art Buchwald? He was in hospice for 6 months, and see, look how much longer he lived. He left hospice and then, came back in later again? Mm-hmm. It does help.
Yeah. It really is true, yeah. Art Buchwald was here at the Washington Home, and Community Hospice is right up the street and from your studio, and he did, I think he actually enjoyed his experience there.
Didn't he do a lot of writing while he was there, too? Because he was still working on a book and was able to do that because he was probably pain-free and he was able to focus on what it was he wanted to do in his last months of his life.
Right. Part of what we do is, I mentioned we educate professionals, and we educate professionals through a program. It's much like a television program with experts. We go out and interview people who either hospice patients or palliative care patients or professionals. Each year we take a different subject. Last year, actually, we did cancer and end-of-life care. And I interviewed one gentleman who is just a wonderful man from Reston, Virginia, who was diagnosed with non-curable esophageal cancer. Mm-hmm. He is in his mid-50s, and this was right around Thanksgiving of last year. He opted not to pursue treatment, even though doctors had suggested, his oncologist said, go see this radiation guy and go see this chemo guy, mm-hmm. as this man, Tom O'Brien, would call them, the chemo guy and the radiation guy. And he said, they couldn't tell me that I was going to have a better chance of, I was going to live 10% longer if I had this treatment than I would if I had no treatment. So I opted for no treatment. And just last month, I think, last month or earlier this month, I can't remember what month it is, Tom and I had another conversation in his home in Reston, and Tom is now receiving hospice care from Capital Hospice, which is one of the larger hospices here in the area. And, he looks terrific. He sounds terrific. He still has energy. And he has been very, very happy with the decision that he made. Certainly, that's not for everybody. I think it took a lot of courage and a different outlook than some people have. But he is a living, walking example of how helpful palliative care and hospice can be.
Yeah, I think sometimes families can put pressure on the patient as well to feel like if you don't try everything available, you're cheating us out of our father, our husband, our brother, our mother, father, whatever. And I think sometimes the patient feels like in order for me to try to live, I should try to receive everything possible. But I think as you're saying, and as he chose to do, there are other options.
Right. In his case, I think his family experience played into the decision that he made. His father had died of brain cancer a couple of decades ago, and Tom watched that and saw his father try every kind of treatment there was and die a very painful, miserable death. So he
and a lot of it caused from the treatment itself, more so than maybe from the cancer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's certainly what Tom thinks in this case. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything specific about the case myself, but he saw his father try just about everything, and you know, it's an individual choice.
It's
a very individual choice. You know,
but again, the important thing is to know you have a choice.
And that's exactly
your choice,
right,
to decide how much and what length you want to go to try to prolong your life or to try to cure the disease. And you work tandem, I guess, with your oncologist or your doctor, whoever it is that's providing the medical treatment.
Right. Tammy, that is so right. I mean, it really is an individual choice. And that is what is important to me in many ways with hospice, is that it really does give people the choice to decide what they want to do at the end of life. And certainly hospice is not going to be for everybody. It is growing in use in the United States. I mean, hospice, the first hospice in the United States was in 1974. Now, you know, 35 years later, a third of all people who die in the United States are using hospice care. So that's
aging population too.
And an aging population. That's right. So people, yeah, people are living longer and, you know,
it's something we have to think about. Right. I think when we come back, we're going to take a little break at this point. We come back from the break, we're going to talk more about, the decision to go from aggressive treatment to hospice care. And also, I want to further define, because I still think I'm not clear completely on how hospice differs from palliative care. So I want to talk a little bit more about that when we come back from the break. And we'll be back with Amy in just a couple of minutes.
Looking for usable news and information that helps you do your job? Tune into In Depth with Francis Rose every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Francis explores the relationship between agencies and Congress by taking you to the hearing rooms on Capitol Hill and asking questions of federal decision makers and experts. You'll get a firsthand look at how Congress affects your agency's personnel, funding, and oversight. In Depth also looks at the relationship between agencies and contractors, companies that do billions of dollars of business with the federal government, talk about the work they're doing for agencies, the work they're bidding on, and the work they didn't get. And In Depth will help you be a better manager. Francis talks to authors, scholars, and managerial experts about managing projects, managing your workforce, and managing yourself. In Depth with Francis Rose, every weekday afternoon from 1 to 3 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Dorebeck Insider, hosted by award-winning journalist and free thinker Chris Dorebeck. Engage your mind every afternoon from 3 to 7 as Chris engages the best minds in federal procurement, management, IT, and human resources. The Dorebeck Insider takes on subjects critical for an efficient government. Chris's guests answer the questions you want answered. Tune in to hear how the news shapes your daily interactions in the federal space. The Dorebeck Insider, weekday afternoons from 3 to 7, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. My name is Tammy Flanagan, and I'm hosting the show today along with Ann Vincent. And our topic today is hospice. And we're approaching that topic from not only an insurance point of view as far as what's covered, what's not, but also just from a personal point of view as far as how much choice you have and whether or not this is for you, if you're in a situation where this might be a choice of treatment or a choice of the way to spend those last days of life. And to help us understand this topic and to give us information, as she does in her everyday business, we have Amy Tucci, who's the president and CEO of the Hospice Foundation of America, which we've learned is an educational resource. It's a place for education and resources, I should say, not just educational resource, but both are available through the organization. And Amy has been talking with us about what is hospice and different situations where it comes into play. So we wanted to find out a little bit more about how prevalent, I know it's been around for about, 30, 35 years where we've had this idea of hospice care. And I guess it's grown a lot over the years. So how many hospice organizations are there throughout the country, and how do we access them? Is it only through a physician referral, or is it something the individual can ask for themselves? Because I think that what we're learning here is that maybe we as a patient have choice in whether or not we receive this type of care. And maybe to start with is, again, how does hospice differ from hospital and medically necessary care? Like, where does that distinction come, where it goes from hospital care or medically necessary care to the term hospice? You know, what is that definition?
Well, Tammy, let me start by saying there are about 5,000 hospice providers across the United States, and they come in all shapes and sizes. Some are nonprofits, some are for-profits, some are individual organizations, providers, some are part of a national chain.
Are they regulated in a way that you know that you're going to get good quality care, or is one different from another? Do they have to meet certain standards?
All are perhaps slightly different. However, all Medicare-certified hospices must meet certain criteria for operation. And most hospices are Medicare-provided. Certified. Mm-hmm. There are some hospices that are all-volunteer hospices, but the majority of them are Medicare-provided. It's something important to check, I think.
Yeah, it would be something you would ask before you receive the service. Now, if you're the patient, is it something that your doctor has to recommend for you, or do you have any control over when hospice begins? And I know you were telling us before the break about the gentleman who opted not for any kind of aggressive care for his cancer, but he wanted to receive more, just keep me comfortable so that I can enjoy whatever time I have left.
That's right.
So he did have a choice.
Right. And you don't have to wait for your doctor to make a hospice referral. And that's something that everyone should know. If you believe that you or a family member would benefit from hospice care, you can pick up the phone and call a hospice in your area and ask them how to initiate the process of receiving care.
Can it be received at home or in a facility, or what's the difference?
Absolutely. About 40, most hospice care is provided at home. More than 90% is provided in a person's place of residence. That can mean their private home or apartment. It can mean a long-term care facility, an assisted living facility. Some hospice care is provided in a hospital. Some is provided in a hospice, what people might know as a hospice house, a residential facility that provides hospice care. And some hospice care is also provided for short periods of stay at an inpatient facility for symptom and pain control.
So besides the pain management, the palliative care, what else does hospice include? Like, what other services would you receive if you're receiving hospice care?
You receive care from a team at hospice, and I think it's probably the only medical service that we have in this country that actually is so team-oriented. And that's, I think, what makes it one of the many things that makes hospice care so different than what we know about medical care here in the United States today. You've got a doctor, a physician, a registered nurse, a social worker, a chaplain, a physical therapist or occupational therapist, a dietitian, and volunteers all at your disposal. So those people are not at your bedside 24 hours a day for sure, but they are a phone call away.
You need a service from, like if you're not getting the proper nutrition, the nutritionist can help you decide how to change your diet so
exactly.
that it cuts down on whatever's causing the aggravation.
Right. I mean, that's a lot good. Of people, when they're toward the end of life, there are certain foods that they just can't handle. A dietitian will work with the family to get around it, providing the best nutrition that someone can have toward keeping in mind their condition. So
there's a social worker, I think, would also maybe work with the family as well to help the family cope with what's happening or give
right.
them resources to go to.
Exactly. The social worker can be a great help with community resources, financial resources. I mean, if that's a necessity, there are, and then the chaplain can also be a very important spiritual component for people. Even if they're not, a deeply religious people, mm-hmm. The chaplain is there to really serve the spiritual need. And I neglected, and I shouldn't have neglected, a bereavement counselor who's there for families as well. So it's a whole host of services that you get with hospice care, not just an appointment at a doctor's office.
Mm-hmm. So if you're receiving care at home in hospice, is it something that you would need to contact the hospice when you felt you needed the care, or would they see you on a regular basis? Like they would say, we'll come in every day at a certain time.
Right. There are scheduled visits the nurse and the certified nursing assistant will make to the patient. So those will be sort of laid out ahead of time, depending on the patient's condition, how necessary it is to visit. Sometimes that can change after pain and symptoms are controlled. There may be fewer visits than more frequent visits, and then maybe toward the end of when there's more care that's needed, there would be more frequent visits. So that all changes, but the most important thing to remember is that, if you need somebody, you can get somebody right away mm-hmm. by calling the hospice.
That's good.
24
hours a day, they're there to serve you.
Yeah. Do they ever provide tranquilizers for the family members?
To help deal with the stress?
Yes, anxiety pills.
I don't think that would be covered under hospice benefit. But certainly it is a stressful time for caregivers.
I almost think the caregivers are suffering as much as the person receiving care, because they're thinking in terms of what's going to happen eventually and how am I going to live with the outcome of
it's really so true. I mean, it's the caregiver is, there are so many things going on there, both from the, some people are taking time off of work to be there. Some people are, giving
up. Or they're facing when the loved one passes away, they may lose health insurance because they were the one providing it, or there may not be enough insurance, life insurance, to cover my expenses, and I'm going to face, living in poverty. So I'm sure the
being a caregiver can be a very stressful situation. I think hospice is one of the things that can make it better.
Does the hospice care end when the patient dies, or do they provide continuing care to the surviving family members, especially a spouse or children?
Right. For family members, even close friends, there is a benefit that extends after the death of that person, and children, of course, or grandchildren. Bereavement care, bereavement counseling, bereavement help for those people for 12 months, 13 months after the death of the person.
Yeah, I know my friend lost her husband from cancer, and he did spend his last week, maybe 2 weeks, in hospice at the hospital. He was inpatient in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And after his death, she attended a grief support group, which now that you're saying this, I'm thinking probably was funded through the hospice rather than through the hospital, maybe.
Right. It probably was. Yeah. It was probably a hospice. And another thing that I think listeners might be interested in is hospices will provide grief counseling for people even if a death wasn't in hospice care. Mm-hmm. So, if there...
She said that was a major help to her in handling the death of her husband, because she felt angry that
it's a very common
reaction.
She felt
like he didn't do enough to try to cure himself.
Oh.
I guess it's like for some reason she had this thought that maybe if he would have done more, he could have gotten better. Which I don't know that he could have, and I think she realizes that now. But it helped her to get over that anger she had at him leaving her at such a young age, because he was only 52 when he died.
Right, anger is not an uncommon reaction when it comes to grief. You know, beyond the sadness, and anger is common.
I guess so, yeah. It's just be a natural reaction, as any of our emotions might be, to that situation. And speaking about myths about grief, I was looking on your website, and they have a lot of myths. And it says, you know, we only grieve the death of somebody. And the reality is we also grieve the loss rather than just the death. But I guess the loss of that provider, that family member, and so forth. And it says only family members can grieve. And I guess grief can be shared by...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, grief can be, you know, a friend,
extended family, neighbors,
a teacher, somebody who's just part of your life, who's no longer there, can really have a major impact on your outlook.
Yeah, and it says here too, this is one that I've seen with people I know, and it says individuals should leave grieving at home. Where you think, well, okay, I'm home, I can let the tears flow, but when I'm out in public or when I'm with family at an event, I should try to hold it in. But I guess that's not necessarily how we grieve. You know, anything can trigger a moment of grief.
Absolutely, and grief can come at the most unexpected moment. I mean, that emotion, you know, you could be doing something that where you weren't thinking about the person at all, and then suddenly it'll hit you. And, you know, people understand, people understand that you need time, grief doesn't only happen at home.
And not for just a day or two afterwards, it can go for a long time.
It can go for a very long time, and that's why for, you know, the 12-month bereavement care, 12, 13-month bereavement care in hospice care is so important, because... And sometimes
prepare for that.
Sometimes, especially right after the death, there are lots of arrangements to make and things to do, and
people are sending cards and dinners in.
Exactly,
you're busy, busy, busy.
You're busy answering the phone or answering emails, and it takes your mind off of it. It's almost a good thing in a way. It kind of cushions you from that
shock. With the reality of what's to come.
But then, you know, after the funeral or after the memorial service or, you know, that's when it can really become an important, that's when it really hits you. And
that was the last myth. It said grievers are best left alone. And I think, to me, that would be the worst thing, is that, you know, here I am. I just lost my father, my husband, my mother, whoever. And now I have nobody, and I'd probably want someone to call me and take me out to lunch or something.
Right. Yeah. I think oftentimes people feel like they want to be alone, you know, because it is that thing that you were talking about. It's, I'm going to start crying during lunch, and how am I going to handle that?
So you do.
You know, if it's a good friend, they'll understand.
Yeah. Well, this woman I was telling you about that lost her husband, and he was only 52, that's how I got to know her, because I was helping them with his federal benefits and knowing what's available and so forth. But as a result, we ended up becoming very good friends, and we're probably best friends right now. But after his death, I really admired how she handled that, because she reached out to me, because I didn't even feel we were that close for me to reach to her. But she'd call me and she'd say, what are you doing? Can you go to dinner with me tonight? And I felt guilty saying no. So I'm like, yeah, sure, I'll go to dinner with you. And we ended up making a relationship. And I think it helped bridge that time. And that was her way of reaching out to someone, because her and her husband did everything together. So she didn't have a big circle of girlfriends. It was him, and it was her life. So I think reaching out and making a friend, and she had the courage to call someone
good
that she didn't really know that well.
That's hard.
And it helped her a lot.
Good for her that she did have that courage to reach out. We have... the Hospice Foundation of America, we're fortunate to have one of the preeminent experts on grief consulting for us, and he's been working with us for about 20 years. He is Ken Doka. He's really wonderful, and he has a something that he writes. He's the editor of our... We do a bereavement newsletter called Journeys, which is a very helpful newsletter for people who have experienced a loss. And he often says, you know, in the situation of when you're grieving, make a list of the people you know and who can do what for you. I mean, who can be your best friend?
Because I think people want to help. They
just don't
know where to step in.
Right.
So if you initiate it as the person who's grieving, I think you feel a lot more comfortable helping them because you know they want you to help.
Exactly. And you must have been on your friend's list of, you know, person who can be a friend and a good listener.
Yeah.
But those people are very important. I mean, a person who can run an errand for you or a person who can, you know, babysit the kids, you know, that everyone has sort of a different specialty that can help in
different
that instance.
Need in that area. Now, I know when you hear organization or type of the type of place where you work, you think, well, do I have to be a member to be able to get the services that your organization provides? Is it a membership oriented organization or can anybody take advantage of your services?
We are not a membership organization. We partner with the hospices that we provide education to, or at least we like to think that we partner with them. They certainly are partners to us. But we, we provide all the information we provide either at a nominal cost or we provide it free. There is a whole section on our website, which again is www.hospicefoundation.org. Where it's the Hospice Information Center, and you can go and get information, really comprehensive information about hospice care, grieving, caregiving. We have materials available in Spanish and materials available in Chinese. And soon I hope we'll have some materials available in Vietnamese. But the most of it is in English. The overwhelming majority of it is in English. So visit our website if you're interested in hospice care or you think you may know someone who needs it or you're dealing with that situation yourself. And, you know, call us, too, because we have a sort of a stable of experts there ready to answer your questions or your emails. If you go to the homepage of our website, you can ask a question through the Ask HFA.
Oh, that's good. So you actually can talk to individuals rather than just the organizations that you partner with.
Right. And we have physicians, nurses, social workers, and just trained staff, volunteers who
have been in the field and
right.
who've worked in that area.
Yeah.
And I see another website here, too, hospicedirectory.org.
Thanks, Anne. Yeah, hospicedirectory.org will help you find a hospice. It's one of our websites, but it'll help you find a hospice in your area. So if you go to hospicedirectory.org and you put in your city and state, you'll find a hospice in your area. But if that doesn't work for you or you don't have internet access, call us. We tell people where to locate their local hospice or several local hospices. If there are three or four in your area, we'll give you all the phone numbers and help
resources
you
and help.
Get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think as we plan retirement, and a lot of times, myself included, we think about, oh, we'd love to move, you know, someplace where there's golf courses and there's the beach or there's the mountains and the nice fresh air. But I think we also have to think of living near medical facilities, because I would imagine hospice is going to be more prevalent in a big city or metropolitan area than if you're living out in the rural part of Alaska or someplace up in the mountains, that you want to keep that in as a consideration as where you live when you're looking for medical care.
That's probably pretty true, but amazingly, there is hospice care in rural areas too, and hospice nurses travel great distances to see patients. So, you know, a hospice nurse may be driving 50-100 miles just to see one patient. And
they will go to that length.
And they do go to that length.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's wonderful to know, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, if anybody wants to learn more about your own federal health plan, because if you're not 65 or if you have a family member who has an illness and you're wondering about this type of care, you can also go to opm.gov, and if you put a / insure, so it'd be opm.gov insure, You can click on the left-hand side, and it'll list all the health plans, and you can link to either the plan brochure or the plan website, and that's where you'll find the coverage for not only hospice care, but any type of health care that you might need through your federal health plan. So as you're looking at plans this upcoming open season, you can compare, you know, how one plan might cover that service more than another, especially if you do have a family member who's been diagnosed. And the other thing I think a lot of federal employees and retirees worry about is that if we already have that diagnosis, can we switch plans? And in the federal health plan, you can switch plans regardless. There's no pre-existing condition clause that says they would not take you. So you can switch plans if you find one covers what you need better than another plan.
That would be a good question for us to ask Tammy this open season for our radio programs for the different health reps.
Yeah, I think
add
so
that
too.
We'll add that to our list of questions
because we've never really discussed hospice before.
No.
And I find this conversation very informative and interesting because it is something that when you're in that situation where you have the diagnosis or you have the family member who's suffering through the illness, it's too late. You know, it's nice to know these services are available ahead of time, and it's comforting to know how you can receive them and have some control over it.
Right. And the important thing for people to know is, you know, 6 months is not the end point of hospice. I mean, you can be recertified. So if you were to enter hospice care with, you know, under that 6 month initial umbrella of coverage for Medicare or some health insurance plans, you would you can be recertified.
Because I know with cancer, people go into remission, and sometimes that can last long time.
Right.
So that wouldn't
And sometimes people leave hospice care too. So it's not once you make that choice, it is, you know, not the last.
They're not going to make sure you die before
6 months.
That's right. That's right.
I think maybe that's what some people think.
But
that's
they do.
A death sentence.
So they put it off and thinking, oh, maybe I won't.
Yeah,
I only
or
have
when
six
you
months.
Hear, like, oh, John went into hospice.
Right.
I know. That's terrible because
right.
you know that what that means generally is that he's at the end of.
But don't you think most people don't realize or know that they have at least 6 months and then beyond that, too? I think a lot of people think hospice, oh, they only got a few weeks left.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not true.
That's not necessarily true.
But
the important thing,
I think, is to make that decision earlier than later. And also to know that hospice is, it's really a change in perspective. It's a change from hope for a cure to hope for quality of life, a pain-free life, you know, pain-free final months of your life, and a chance to spend that time, that quality time with your family and friends, which you might not be able to do under other circumstances.
Once you've waited too long, you can't put the clock back.
Right.
Well, we are on our last few seconds, minutes of the program. So, Ann, any final words?
No, just tune in next week because Bob Lyons will be back with Tom O'Rourke, and they'll talk about that great, exciting topic, income taxes.
Wow. And, Amy, we want to thank you so much for coming on the show today and giving us a new perspective on something that a lot of us don't like to think about. So thank you again.
Thank you, Tammy and Ann. It's been a pleasure.
Well, join us next week. As Ann said, we will have Tom O'Rourke, and Bob will be back to entertain you and ask questions of Tom. So have a great week.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics.